Welcome to OpenHive.js, the podcast for all things JavaScript. We are your hosts, James Nell and Matteo Collina.
No matter how good of a React or JavaScript or anything developer you get to be, the most important thing above all of that is to be kind.
For this episode, we are sitting down with Kent C. Dodds to discuss React, Cool Node Modules, open source, some fantastic training programs that Kent launched, and, you know, a lot of other nice things.
I was able to extract out the core parts of the library into what is now called DOM testing library. And that's the foundation for React testing library and Vue testing library and Angular testing library. And we've got a Cypress and a Puppeteer and a Playwright, and like all anywhere you find a DOM, you can use DOM testing library to improve your tests.
Let's get into it. This is OpenHive.js from Nearfront. Welcome, Kent. Would you like to introduce yourself a little bit?
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you. So, really, thank you for having me on the podcast. It's always an honor to join nice folks like you all. And so I am a software engineer. I live in Utah in the United States and married and have four kids and a dog. The dog is okay, but the kids are great. So I am a full-time teacher and trainer. And I worked for PayPal up until like 2 years ago and then went full time. And it's been great. I teach people how to write quality software so we can work together to make the world a better place. I am an instructor also on Egghead.io, and I've got stuff on front end masters. And I do a lot of open source stuff. I'm really into building open source communities and getting people together because I feel like we can make the world a better place better when we work together. And that's one of the things that really appeals to me about open source. And I just really enjoy helping people accomplish their life goals.
Right on. Yeah, that's fantastic to talk with you again. I was trying to think back, when I met you, it was back in 2015 at Mozilla's offices. We were doing one of the very first collaborator summits for the Node project. Mm. And you were there helping facilitate it. I've always enjoyed, you know, the chances to chat with you and stuff. It's been fantastic, and I have been following, you know, a lot of what you've been doing with the teaching. The fact that you've been able to go off and working for yourself now, doing this full time, the teaching and the open source stuff full time. How's that been going for you?
You know, I was pretty confident that things were going to work well before I went full-time teaching. My wife and I are very risk averse, and we just, you know, with four kids, we just really don't want to take a chance. Luckily, in our industry, the fallback plan is just to get another job. And with the reputation that I built for myself, that would hopefully not be a huge issue. But still, we didn't want to go through like the rigmarole of quitting a job, having something fail, and then going to get a new job. So I was pretty confident that things were going to go well, and they have gone super well. So I launched testingjavascript.com before quitting PayPal, and that basically replaced my PayPal salary. So then I did a relaunch the next year, and then just this last year, I launched epicreact.dev, and that's done even better. And so, yeah, things have been going really well. I've been able to reach a lot more people than I was when I was just doing this in the evenings and stuff. So it's, yeah, I've been really happy with this.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. You know, the Epic React, I'm not a big React person myself, but when I do need to dig into some information, your stuff is always the place I start and kind of go out from there. So, you know, it's an absolutely fantastic resource. And one thing that we're going to make sure we do in the show notes is put, you know, any of the links, you know, for this testing JavaScript and Epic React and anything else that comes up, we'll make sure those go in the show notes so everyone else can get those as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. So why don't you talk, tell us a little bit about Epic React, you know, and kind of how that was conceived, how you launched it, kind of what its goals are, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So I've been doing courses for a really long time. I graduated from college in 2014 And then just a few months later, I started recording videos for Egghead and doing courses on that platform. And this would all happen after hours. You know, I finish work, I help get the kids to bed. And then my wife is like, hey, I need some space. So go away for a little bit. So I would record videos. And that worked out really well as just doing a side thing. I also started doing workshops. So you do like live in-person workshops for the first couple of years that I was doing those. And I pretty much always had to decide, okay, so this is a course is going to be different from a workshop. So a course is like something that somebody can just sit back, they take notes, they don't really follow along. It's not really the sort of thing that you can just type what I type and you're going to learn it. Like that's not how learning works. And so it was always more of a watch me follow along. And then my workshops were very interactive. I played around with a couple different formats and finally landed with one where it's very exercise focused. I don't teach you what you're supposed to know before you do the exercise. I actually flip it on its head and I just tell you, here's the problem. Here are the resources you need to be able to solve the problem. Go and solve the problem. And then when you're done, I'll go through it to answer any questions that might have popped up. And then I'm just very hand-holdy in code comments and different things like that so that you can be successful. And based on research that has been done and my own experience, that has been really successful. But the problem is that when I want to turn it around and scale myself, I want to do a video course on that. And when you switch to video course, then it becomes less interactive, you know, don't type what I type sort of thing. I wanted to have some way to have the best of both worlds where you can get that kind of workshop experience where you're actually consuming and understanding this information and it's being retained because nothing really matters if you don't actually remember it. But also I want to be able to scale myself because as it is with a workshop, whether it's remote or in person, there are a lot of drawbacks. If it's in person, then either I have to fly out to you or you have to fly out to me, or worst case scenario, we both have to fly to a common location. And so we're in a situation where we're not well rested, we're sleeping not in our own bed, we have to worry about getting transit and all of that. It's just not a great learning environment. And then if it's a remote workshop, that's actually better in a lot of situations, but still, I don't scale very well. My time is valuable and it's really nice to have me there and ask questions and stuff. But the cost is prohibitively expensive for a lot of people. And so I wanted to figure out some way that I could take the workshops that I had on React. I had a whole bunch of workshops about React that I could give. And I wanted to make those recorded so that I could scale myself. So I didn't have to be there physically present anytime somebody wanted to learn React, but also not lose all of the benefits of it being exercise-based and self-driven and self-paced and being able to have access to the instructor and also very importantly, access to class members. So other people that you're learning with. And so that's where Epic React kind of came from. Now, testing JavaScript came earlier, like 2 years earlier, and that was much more of a course-driven thing. It's very similar to Egghead. It's like a collection of like 7 or 8 Egghead courses on a single platform. And actually, Egghead collaborated with me to build that. So they took care of pretty much everything except for the creating the content material, recording the content, and then executing the marketing strategy through email and Twitter and stuff like that. I did those things. They did everything else. They handle support and the platform and all that. And they even edit the videos for me. And so that was a really successful collaboration. And when we did the relaunch, I added a new module because I had a workshop lying around that I wanted to add to it. That was testing Node applications. And that was following this new format that I'd created for very exercise focused and like intentionally focused on retention. So I just experimented with that one and said, what if I just record this workshop like it's a workshop? And I say, okay, here's the problem. And that's a video. I just described the problem. So I was never used to creating videos that didn't actually teach something very specific. And so I just said, hey, we're going to have a video that says, here's the problem. Now stop the videos and go work on that solution. That ended up being super successful. People really liked it. And so I said, okay, cool. So I've got like a half dozen or maybe more React workshops that I could do in this same way. And we put that together into this one big thing. So that's the idea of where Epic React came from. And that has done exceedingly well. two of the things that are really important to me, you know, in scaling myself so that I can make these workshops affordable for people is I didn't want to lose the opportunity for people to learn in a group, because I think that's really important to people's actual learning, is actually that group, you know, that class kind of thing. And then I also wanted to make people feel more comfortable knowing that they weren't giving up the instructor presence there. Like when you're at a workshop, you can stop the instructor and ask questions and stuff. If it's just recorded, you don't really get that opportunity. And so I did two things. The first was I started office hours. And so every week for free for anybody, you don't even need a license to Epic React. And in fact, all of the Epic React material and all the testingjavascript.com material is all open source and free for you to go through on your own. So what you're buying when you get the license to these platforms is the videos. So you can watch my explanation as I go through the exercises. But you can totally go through this on your own. And that's very intentional. I wanted this to be accessible for people. And so the office hours, that's also totally free. You just show up when I'm doing office hours. You can ask me anything that you want to. And in addition to that, I also created a Discord community where a bunch of people who are going through my stuff, this is also free. And so like there are sections of the Discord community where you can talk about the specific workshops and things and ask questions of each other. And then to take it even further, I also created this thing called KCD Learning Clubs, where you can get together with a group of around 10 other people who want to go through the material together. And you can create your own Discord group and go through a specific schedule. And I give some outlines of some ideas of different schedules that you could use to go through it. Epic React is, to be clear for everybody, it's so big that it's best compared to a semester-long course at a university. So it for most people, it should take several months to get through all of the material properly. And so the schedule, I think, goes over 14 or 15 weeks, and you can go through it together as a group. So you get the benefit of it being totally self-paced, but also having a group of people to go through it together. And then you have my office hours to ask me questions. All this stuff that I've done comes back to my mission of being able to make the world a better place by enabling other people to know how to build quality software so they can go take that knowledge and make their corner of the world a better place. And that's the whole idea behind all of this stuff. So I just talked for a long time. I'm like I told you, I'm a rambler, but
it's been amazing listening to you. So I didn't really want to interrupt you in any possible way. Such a fantastic big story that, you know, it's, I don't know, I really wanted to have you here at Open Hive to talk about it, because it's such a big inspiration. Essentially, you're doing a lot of fantastic things. It's I share a lot of your passions to some of the stuff. I joined the big open source community essentially to help other developers develop quality software essentially. And I basically focus most of my time in just developing the things, so not too much on the education front. I do a few talks, a few workshops here and there. But I'm definitely not a full-time trainer. I probably am not a full-time anything these days. it's pretty nice. To be honest, it's been, you know, I've ended up writing a bunch of things. So it's truly fantastic. How can you improve others and so on? It's so great. Once upon a time, I end up in a Twitter discussion with some so-called guru at the time. And I was saying, well, I maintain Node.js and I write software for Node.js because it has such a low barrier to entry that it can enable a lot of other people to develop amazing software. And, you know, I'm actually writing software writing open source libraries to make that easier for them. And the answer to this so-called guru was, oh, I don't want them to touch a keyboard.
And that's not good.
Yeah, that, you know, that's I love when I can meet other people with this that share this same attitude. And you know, you've been doing great. So really, congrats on all the work that you have been doing. And that's hopefully a lot of people will see a lot better, a lot more good web apps being built.
I do have a question. I noticed in the Epic React, you know, in the FAQ there, you know, you talk about something called PPP, purchasing power parity. What is that?
Yeah, so this is something that I think was mostly popularized by Wes Boss. And Joel Hooks, who is the I think he's technically president of Egghead.io or something like that. But yeah, he's kind of the dude in charge of Egghead.io. And he's the one that I work with directly to create testingjavascript.com and Epic React. And when he first approached me about testingjavascript.com, he framed it as WestBoss as a service. So he's like, I'll do all of the things that WestBoss does for himself. He creates all of his course platform and everything. And he's not the only one to do this, but yeah, he is a popular name in the industry for doing this. So he said, I'll do all of that stuff and you just focus on creating content. And I was like, sweet, that is awesome. Because otherwise I would spend the next 2 or 3 years just working on the platform and I wouldn't be able to create the content. And the platform would be interesting, technically challenging and all of that. But that's not what I want to do in the world. Like I'm good at teaching people stuff. So anyway, when we first launched testingjavascript.com, we didn't have purchase power parity, which basically means these days, if you don't have that, it means that you're going to get like tons of tweets from people saying, why don't you implement PPP like WestBoss? So everybody does that now. And so the basic idea for those who are unfamiliar is the dollar is worth a different amount based on where you are in the world. So like if you're in the United States, a couple bucks can get you a gallon of milk. But if you're in India, for example, then you're going to need more than a couple bucks to buy the same thing. And so because of this, and because what we're selling is something that's digital and it doesn't actually cost us any extra to deliver this content, regardless of where you are in the world, it makes sense for us to charge it for the value that it's providing to the individual who's purchasing it. And for somebody in the United States who could take this course and then get a job that's paying them six figures, then yeah, sure, we can charge a reasonable amount for that sort of thing. But if you're coming from Brazil or something, you're not going to get a six-figure job, you know, in US dollars from taking this course. And so PPP basically is just changing what price it is based on where you're coming from in the world so that we can make it as accessible to as many people as possible while still having a sustainable business. And it ends up working out really well. And I'm really glad that Joel built that into the platform so we can offer that.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. I love that approach. I can really see how it would kind of help make the accessibility of that content.
And you know, it's important to me that the content is accessible. I do still want to provide value to the world. And so that's why, like you said, James, earlier, that my stuff is what you come to when you want to do anything with React. This is actually a very natural thing I hear from people all the time, that anytime they have a question on React, they Google it and my blog posts are the first thing that come up. And that's one of the things that I try to do to make this knowledge accessible to everybody. Now, I can't have a sustainable business by just giving everything for free, but I can do a lot of things for free. And so the blog posts are one thing. And then all of the content, all the material itself is completely open source and you can go through it on your own. And so when people reach out to me and say, hey, I can't afford this, you know, it's just really expensive. I tell those people, you know, you can look at the wealth of information that I have available through on GitHub or on YouTube or in my blog. And because I do still want to reach those people. And that's kind of how I try to go about doing that.
Right on. That's, yeah, that's obviously fantastic. Now it does, you know, this... You're talking about, you know, people wanting things for free and all this kind of stuff. I mean, you also have your other foot very, very firmly in the open source community, where we get this all the time, where people just, you know, have this assumption, open source is free, you know, just give it to me free. When there is so much cost, there is so much effort, there is so much that's put into it that, you know, it's absolutely not free.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you really have to look at the quality and the value that you're getting out of it. So on that open source side, I know you've done quite a bit here. In fact, your testing library just scored the highest on satisfaction on the State of JS 2020 survey for 2020, which is congratulations.
Thank you.
Fantastic bit of code. What other open source stuff have you been doing, or, you know, and like what is testing library for folks that haven't taken a look at it?
Yeah, sure. So I've been doing open source stuff since 2014-ish. Actually, 2013 was, I think, when I first started publishing. Nope, 2012. It's been a long time. And I really enjoy developing in the open. I think I have the right level of hubris to not worry about people judging my code. And so open source as a default has just been kind of the thing for me. testing library is that's the library. It's called testing library, which works pretty well for SEO, I guess. The idea is it's a set of utilities to enable you to test mostly DOM related stuff. So anything that goes to a DOM, you can test it really well with testing library. We also support React Native and other things could be built to give you the same types of APIs for different platforms, but it's mostly UI stuff.
It's pretty amazing, to be in fairness. let me confirm this. It's pretty amazing. Okay, we use it everywhere as Nearform. So thank you.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad to hear that. It came out of, actually, I created testing library as I was preparing a testing workshop. So I was going to teach how to test React, and Enzyme was the standard at the time. Whenever I'm teaching an abstraction, if I have time, I want to take back out of the abstraction first and teach the fundamentals, and then we'll get into the abstraction. I even do this with React. The first lesson when you take a React workshop from me actually doesn't even use React. It's like, here, let's create a DOM node, and we'll stick it into the DOM. And so when I was doing that with Enzyme, the leap from no Enzyme to let's use Enzyme was just really big. And I couldn't figure out how to make that leap to that abstraction smaller. And also I was really frustrated because I was going to start making a list of all the things that you shouldn't do with Enzyme. And so because there are a lot of things that Enzyme enabled you to do, which you really shouldn't do if you want to have a solid suite of tests that are actually useful. And so as I was thinking about this, I realized that there wasn't actually a whole lot that you needed to do from an abstraction point of view to get really useful and valuable tests, just a couple of small utilities. And so instead of teaching people Enzyme at that workshop 2 weeks later, I actually taught them my brand new library that I just released, and they were paying me money for this. So I was really hoping that this worked out, and it did. And so that's where testing library came from. I eventually realized that because of my focus on avoiding implementation details, most of the utilities were totally free of any implementation details of the fact that you were even using React. The only thing it cared about was that you were using a DOM. And so I was able to extract out the core parts of the library into what is now called DOM testing library. And that's the foundation for React testing library and Vue testing library and Angular testing library. And we've got a Cypress and a Puppeteer and a Playwright, and anywhere you find a DOM, you can use DOM testing library to improve your tests. And it's been really successful. I built a community around it for the natural day where I decide I don't really want to, or I don't have time to maintain it myself anymore, that other people could step up. And that day actually came 2 months ago, where I said, you know what, I can't do this, maintain this anymore, and also do the other things I need to do. So I handed it off, and now it's actively maintained. The people maintaining it are awesome. And of all the open source projects that I've created, which is not a small number, I have over 100 packages on NPM, this one is by far the most successful. From a usefulness to the community standpoint, as well as a long-term maintainability strategy standpoint as well.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely fabulous. And as Mateo said there, we're using it everywhere. We'll make sure the link gets in the show notes on that. If you haven't taken a look at it's well worth the time.
Great. I am super impressed anyway, every time I see your stuff, Kent, because it's... your content is usually well prepared and is well done and is correct. My generic, there is a lot of people that publish things on the web that are completely and just plain wrong. Both James and myself, we sit on the Node.js DSC. I was just checking my stuff on NPM got downloaded 6.2 billion last year. Whoa. Or something like that. It's crazy numbers. Okay, so there is full rows and rows and rows of blog posts, Udemy courses on half of the platform that you can manage that teach things that would not work in production scenarios. This is something, and when I read your stuff, it's correct. So it's it's I like from my point of view is one of those things where it needs to be called out essentially that you're it's great, but like for my main concern is you research your topic so well and it's actually very, very well framed.
Well, thank you. You know, I definitely make mistakes and I try to fix those as much as possible. I do have a funny story about this. So I have a blog post called, my short URL is kcd.im/tears. And the title of the blog post is Misunderstanding ES6 Modules, Upgrading Babel, Tears, and a Solution. So I don't know if you all recall, but back in October 2015, Sebastian McKenzie and James Kyle and the rest of the Babel team switched from Babel 5 to Babel 6, which took it from like everything's included to now you need to have a bunch of plugins to get Babel to do anything useful. Yep. And there was a breaking change with how modules worked. And what I had been doing and teaching for months had been wrong. I basically did like a export default of an object, and then I would do a named import of like basically destructuring the values of that object on the import side. And we all know now that is not correct. And I was super confused. I had like an existential crisis of sorts. And when I realized that I'd been teaching people wrong for so long, I was super, super sad. And so that's where creating this blog post was, you know, to try and rectify that and explain what I'd done wrong and how to fix it. And then I created a talk that was more than you need to know about ES modules so that I could, you know, record that talk and make sure everybody knew. So I do think that correctness is really important. But one thing that I want to make sure people take away from this is correctness is one of the reasons that so many people say they're not going to create content because they're worried that the content that they create is incorrect. And that's sad to me because I think that so many people have so much to offer. They don't even know how much they have to offer and how valuable their voice is in this world of content creation and just helping teach what they know, that it's sad to me anytime somebody feels like they shouldn't create content. So if you don't feel like you have a super solid grasp on something, creating content is actually how you develop that super solid grasp on that thing. And so, yeah, you should research it and maybe run it by somebody who you think knows better. The fact that that content exists already is irrelevant. Who cares if it already exists? It doesn't exist from you. And so you can create it. That's new because it's coming from you. And if you do slip up and you have something wrong and somebody corrects you, whether it's in a nice way or a mean way because they're jerks, then you fix it and you move on and life's good. So thank you, Mateo. I have made mistakes and I try to fix those. And but I do try to be accurate.
Well, most people don't. Like I've been calling out a few people and they still keep bad stuff out there all the time.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah. And it's just basically, I can even point out like we are consultants, so we help companies. And I can even point out from where which Udemy courses or blog posts or whatever, they copied that, but they copy and paste that bad pattern. Okay,
yeah.
So just to be clear, you know, it's essentially, this is to some extent problematic. Like at some given point, I ended up writing a log library for Node.js because people were making so many mistakes during logging that I wanted something that would actually do the right thing at the batteries included, essentially. Like it will do the right thing and not wreck people's application in production. Because if your login library cause you a memory leak, you really don't want to use it, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just that, and that's the default behavior, right? Create a memory leak. So,
yeah.
you know, it's, and then, you know, again, people were complaining to me all the time. So, yeah, it's, I liked, by the way, this is Pino. So if somebody wants to, like, let me just, this was a kind of self-promotion here.
He wants to hit his downloads up to 7 billion this year instead of just
it's my tiny logging library. So anyway, it's pretty cool. So no, it's just it's something that I fight all the time. So I'm always thinking of, oh, maybe I should produce really more content on how to explain how to build and run Node.js application in production, because it's such something that's kind of gaps, such a big gap in the ecosystem. And maybe one day I probably would, but we'll see.
Yeah, you know, creating content is really the best way to solidify your own understanding of something. And when you already have a very solid grasp on something, then creating content, especially when you do it for free, is just a really huge service to the community. So I really appreciate when people who are as knowledgeable as you about that subject that go ahead and share that knowledge freely, because I just think it's a really nice service to the community. And it's a good way, I think, to make the world a place where I am happy to live.
Yeah. And I think your point there, you know, about just even if you don't feel like you're great at creating content, just start doing it. It's similar to, you know, opening a pull request, right? You know, if you've never done it before, if you've never contributed to an open source project, really the best place to start is to just do it. Just open a PR. It doesn't matter how big, how small, whatever. And hopefully where you're sending that to, you know, the folks there are going to be nice and actually help you out. And getting it landed. It's the same thing with the content, right? If you put something out there, if it's a little off, you know, hopefully somebody will nudge you in the right direction and, you know, help you get that corrected. But I always love hearing new speakers, getting new content, new people, folks that have just got into the industry and just starting their careers, to see them posting blog posts and getting excited about this stuff. It's absolutely fantastic, you know, to hear, you know, someone like yourself who's made it, you know, this is their career, you know, really pushing that point also. It's great to hear, right? We're not sitting up on any kind of ivory tower saying, nope, it's got to come from the experts on high. No, but it's, you know, it comes from everybody that's writing code, right? Everybody that's in this area. That's where all that knowledge collects from.
Yeah. And in fact, in my experience as being an open source maintainer, one of the best contributors to your projects are those who are just doing it for the first time.
Yeah.
If you do it right, then they'll gain enthusiasm about the project that you're entrusting them with. And like, I really often, actually, I got this from the Node project, where you, and I don't know what the policy is today, but I remember Michael talking about how if you landed a non-trivial change to Node, you got commit access. You were added to the team. And so I started doing that for my projects. And the bar for what is a non-trivial change would vary based on how widely used the project is, just a little bit. But like sometimes even a two-line change in some file would constitute, okay, you get commit access. You know, we have Git. If they screw it up, then like, all right, I guess you're banned now, or like if they were a bad actor, or let me instruct you kindly so that you don't do this again. And then we'll just fix it because we have Git and that, like, we could do that. So trusting people with that really empowers them to rise to the challenge of being a co-maintainer. And I've been able to hand off a lot of projects that way. When I got to this happens, I don't know, like if you've been maintaining open source for a little while and you haven't experienced this, you will experience this eventually, where you have a project that you created or you're maintaining, and you get to a point where you're no longer using the project. You're still interested in its success because you just are, because you're a nice person. You want other people to benefit from your work, but you're not interested in maintaining it anymore, and you know it needs to be maintained. So when you get into that spot, which has happened to me time and time again, if you've done a good job of fostering friendliness and openness and collaboration in your community, then it will be way easier to hand this off to one of those excellent contributors than if you were just like a hoarder that only merged PRs. It doesn't matter. Even if a bunch of people are making PRs, if you're the only one acting as a maintainer, it's very difficult to find somebody to take it over for you when you get in that point. And yeah. I've had both sides of this. I had a library for AngularJS that I really liked, but I did a very bad job of getting co-maintainers, and that's archived. Nobody can publish that anymore. It's stuck. It will never change. But then testing library, I worked really hard to make a big, nice community, openness and friendliness and co-maintainers. And now I'm not even watching the repos anymore. So I've seen both sides of this, and I can tell you that it's much more satisfying to put in the work now to make your projects collaborative so that you can take breaks when you need to.
I have to absolutely agree. I mean, I kind of do the same thing with implementing new node features. Like, I love, doing the initial work and just kind of getting something added, but then seeing other people pile on, and I just kind of step back and let other people run with it. That we've had brand new contributors to the project come in because, we have a new URL parser, right? And they jump in and start maintaining it and driving it forward. It's been fantastic to see that kind of thing. Absolutely love those new folks. And I have a firm belief that the best people to write docs for any project are the brand new people that are coming into it and just
Oh,
starting to learn,
yeah.
right? I'm absolutely horrible at writing decent docs. I mean, it's like I want the people that are coming at it fresh. Now, you mentioned it full time, a few times that, I mean, you do this independent, you work for yourself, full time on the education. How did you get that going where, you're able to do this independently? Was it PayPal that you were at 2 years ago when you left?
So I graduated from college in 2014 and transitioned to full time at a company called Domo. And then it was about a year and a couple of months later that I bounced around a couple of companies and landed at PayPal. And during that year, I got really involved in open source and took over that AngularJS project I was talking about. And that project is still the most popular forms library for AngularJS. It was not small stakes or anything. And so I just got really involved in this. And so when I started working at PayPal, and I was also involved in content creation and stuff too. So it was understood that I would continue with content creation. I would continue with the open source stuff, and they encouraged this because they PayPal rocks. I love PayPal. I was really sad that I couldn't have my cake and eat it too, and stay with PayPal because they were just awesome. But while I was at PayPal, any project that we used internally at PayPal, or that I had open sourced under PayPal's organization, I was able to contribute to as needed on the job, on the clock. And that worked out really well. They encouraged this and it was helpful for PayPal. So like if we're using cross ENV and there's some bug that we needed, then I could go and fix that as the maintainer of that project. Or if we were actually testing library I created while I was there. And so like working on open source was doing my job basically. And that's the interesting thing, like depending on your company, if your company is a reasonable one, then they shouldn't care where the code is that you're working on. Like if it just happens to be an open source and then you use that inside of your to make your product, like their goal should just be like, let's make our product better. And if that code happens to be an open source, then great. Who cares? And so I spent a lot of my time at PayPal working on open source stuff that PayPal used. I've probably wrote 75% of my stuff was within PayPal, so it wasn't like a lot or like most of my stuff, but yeah, PayPal was just super encouraging of that, and I really appreciate them for that. When I went on my own, then it switched from PayPal is paying me to work on open source to Kent C. Dodds Tech LLC is paying me to work on open source. And that is a little bit harder to sell to my boss.
Yep, yeah, definitely a challenge. I'm going to taking that step out where you are driving it yourself. It can be a challenging step to take. No, it's absolutely fantastic, man. It's been a great conversation. I mean, just kind of just catching up with you and getting to know what you're working on and what you've been doing. Our time is coming, to a close. So, just want to see if we can end it. If there's somebody, who's just starting to approach the space, React, and they're just starting their journey in that area, what would be kind of your top three recommendations for them on getting started, and kind of getting their head around what they're doing?
So I actually have a blog post about this. This is one of my secrets to productivity is I rarely answer the same question twice. I'll just write a blog post and then I don't have to answer it again. So yes, this is a very common question, and my blog post is titled "How to React," and so, which is hilarious. I know the puns are just never ending with a framework called React. But yeah, it kind of lays out some of the prerequisite knowledge that you might want to have if you're getting into React. So people can go take a look at that. I talk about like not just a big list of the things that you should know and you know, things that you can learn, but like a methodical approach to which thing you should learn first so that you can have a good understanding of what abstractions you're using. So I'd encourage people to go take a look at that. As part of that, there's also a blog post called The JavaScript You Should Know for React, which also is on my blog, and just shows you a bunch of the common syntax that I use that's maybe common to everybody else, but especially common to React. I'm actually planning on adding another blog post here in the pretty near future called TypeScript to Know for React. So if you want to get into TypeScript, it's here are the sorts of things that we do when in React code bases that you should know. And I actually wrote that one, the JavaScript one, and then I'll write the TypeScript one because this is what I ask people to look at before they go through my material. Because if you don't have this, these are the assumptions that I make, is that you have this level of experience with these things. So I'd encourage people to take a look at that. And if you're just getting started with React, you have maybe a little bit of JavaScript experience, then I have a free course on Egghead called The Beginner's Guide to React that is very good, has really great reviews from thousands and thousands of people. So that can be another really helpful Kickstarter. Now, it is a course, so it's not the sort of thing that you're like doing exercises or anything, but it should give you a really great introduction to React that's like based on my experience in teaching tens of thousands of developers React. So you can give that a look too.
Right on. That was fantastic. We'll make sure there's links to all of that in the show notes for everybody. You know, Kent, it's been absolutely fantastic chatting with you. It's been a great conversation. We talked about a bunch, and I hope everyone enjoyed getting to know a little bit more about you and what you're working on.
Thank you. Yeah. If there's one last thing that I could say, the last biggest takeaway is, I think, and it's especially relevant to today's world where I feel like everybody's just so angry and often for good cause and things. But I think that no matter like how good of a React or JavaScript or anything developer you get to be, the most important thing above all of that is to be kind to other people. And that's what I want to encourage. I want to live in a world where people, maybe there's some disagreements from a technological standpoint or whatever, but I just think that it's really important to be kind. And you'll find yourself in a situation where maybe you're a really well-paid developer and you're the smartest developer in the world, but you're not happy unless you're kind to other people and you value relationships with and human connection. So that's I just wanted to mention that as the last takeaway. Let's make sure that we leave this world better than the way we found it. And I think the best way we can do that is first by being kind.
Yeah, it's being nice to each other. No, that's fantastic. Thank you, Kent. It's been great chatting with you. And to everyone listening, we thank you for joining us. You can catch us on a couple of places, Apple Podcasts, of course, Spotify Podcasts, or you can find us also on anchor.fm/openhivejs. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was fun.
This has been another episode of OpenHive.js, the podcast for all things JavaScript from Nearform. Be sure to subscribe to OpenHive.js on your favorite podcast player. Join us next time for more insights and opinions from the open source and JavaScript communities. Until then, I'm Matteo Collina. Thanks for listening.